Thank you, Rick. Welcome, and thank you for taking part in today's call. Over the past decade, Corvette Racing has had some amazing accomplishments in the GTS and GT1 classes of competition, including winning 77 races and 8 consecutive ALMS championships. Corvette Racing's success has truly been an amazing story. And like most great stories, Corvette Racing's story consists of several chapters. Last month, after Corvette Racing's 6th victory in the 24 Hours of Le Mans, we finished a chapter in Corvette Racing's story by retiring the GT1 Corvettes. We're here today to start the next chapter in Corvette Racing. Corvette Racing is moving towards the future of production-based sports car racing with the introduction of the next-generation Corvette C6R race car. With the international regulations converging around a single GT1 class, Corvette Racing will continue its motorsports heritage by racing against manufacturers and marquees that Corvette competes with in the marketplace, while also increasing the production content of the C6R race car and the relevance of racing to our customers. This is truly a step that positions Corvette for the future of production-based sports car racing worldwide, and a move that's perfectly aligned with GM's marketing and business objectives in racing. The all-new Corvette C6R will debut this coming weekend at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, and it will compete the balance of the season in the GT2 category in the American Le Mans Series. Based on the Corvette C6, or the CR1 supercar, the next generation Corvette C6R has even stronger links to the production version of America's performance icon than its predecessor. While the new C6R will have new graphics, it will retain the Velocity yellow and black color combination that has become synonymous with Corvette racing. We'll also continue with the support of our longtime sponsors and technical partners. CompuWare is the team's primary sponsor, with Mobil 1 supplying low-friction lubricants and Michelin providing its world-class racing tires. Corvette Racing sponsors also include XM Satellite Radio, UAW, GM, Genuine Corvette Accessories, Bose, Motorola, PRS, Guitars, and BBS. And while much of the hardware is changing, Corvette Racing's roster of championship-winning drivers remains the same. Johnny O'Connell and Jan Magnussen will share the number 3 CompuWare Corvette C6R, and Oliver Gavin and Olivier Beretta will drive the number 4 CompuWare Corvette C6R. And at Petit Le Mans, they'll be joined by Antonio Garcia and Marcel Fassler. We look forward to competing against a strong field of outstanding competitors. The competition will be fierce, and we know that in order to win the American Le Mans GT2 class, it not only takes a great team and great drivers, it also takes a great car. We believe our new GT2 Corvette C6R is a great car. And to tell you more about the new race car, I'd like to introduce GM Racing's program manager for Corvette Racing, Doug Behan.
Thank you, Mark. Just from an historical perspective, I know the rest of the people out there know why the move should be fairly obvious to most that follow the sport. Throughout the last decade, after we dispatched the Viper and Saleen and Ferrari and finally Aston Martin, there really was very little competition on a global basis to which to race in the existing one category. So back in late fall 2006 or early 2007, we began discussions as to what we were going to do, what the future of Corvette was going to be as far as its performance on a global stage in racing. And it looked to me and to others as though the GT category was still going to remain strong, but it was probably going to be heading off in the area of GT2. Porsche had pretty much dominated that. Ferrari was making moves to come over. Other manufacturers had been looking at it. So we began a quest to do some research and how we would approach that. We also knew at that point in time what we had on the table with the new ZR1, the highest performance car that GM had ever built, was going to be coming along in that same time frame, and we thought it might be advantageous to just take a look to see if it didn't make some sense to go ahead and move to that category. And as it turned out, it was correct. Now, the last 2 years, we've been racing, as people like to say, racing ourselves, but quite frankly, there hadn't been much better competition than ourselves, and anybody who's watched any of the races, I think, could see that to be true. 2008 was probably our most challenging year since we started racing, and it was for a couple reasons. number one, obviously Lamar has always been the cornerstone of our program. And we wanted to ensure the fact that our last effort there at Lamar was going to deliver us the results that the Corvette deserved, and that would be a close victory. So we were focused on that. We ran a couple races at the beginning of the year, obviously to keep the team sharp, keep the driver sharp, keep the organization running, and operational at the level at which we become accustomed to operating. But alongside of that, during that same time, we were busting our butt back at the shop, designing, developing, and building the new GT2 car. And we were doing that with the same group of people. So they were really doing double time back there. It was pretty impressive to watch that happen. It worked out the cadence that the Pratt Miller had laid out from an engineering standpoint, then a build standpoint, then a tech standpoint. And then finally now they're doing it in Ohio. It's very well orchestrated, very well thought out. We spent a lot of time planning and organizing. All the while doing that, by the way, the most expeditious time frame and most economical budget that we've become very, very lean. We have become very, very quick. We're going to become very, very efficient. And I think the car in Ohio here on the weekend is what I'm talking about. Technical differences between the cars. Categories, you can maybe pick up the rule book and it'll pretty much run through it. But Broad Rush, when you look at the car, it's going to look identical to a ZR1. I mean, it is the exact same body shape. The only difference is it has fender flares. And the rules require that. Careful, I would tell you that if you look at our GT1 car, the side profile of the car was identical to the production car. In other words, there wasn't a lot of coke bottling going on there. But we did, according to the rules, we sectioned the body top down the top of the front and rear quarter panel. So essentially, we added those louvers that you saw on the top that widened the front fender. But when we got out to the outside of the car, the outside areas of the car, they were production, which made for pretty cool, long, low-looking race truck. The GT2 rules don't allow you to do that. So consequently, the fenders that are on the car are the same fenders, the quarter panels are the same quarter panels, the hood's the same hood. Those dimensions are identical to the production vehicle. The headlamps, buckets and shapes and lenses are exactly the same size. In the GT1 car, you might not have noticed it, but they were about 5/4 scale. We blew that up to proportion, it looked cool. But the thing actually, to me anyway, and others who have seen it, it makes a much meaner look at race cars. When you put those fender flares on there, it looks pretty cool. We're pretty excited about that. The rules also require you run a little smaller front spoiler, a little smaller front splitter. You'll notice that for GT production. The cord length on the rear wing is reduced, so it's a little smaller rear wing. All of that, by the way, obviously resulting in less downforce than the old GT1 car. Probably the biggest and most difficult and most challenging change was the GT1 car was a production steel chassis. In the GT2 car, it is an aluminum chassis. And the engineers at Pratt Miller have done an absolutely outstanding job, and we can give you more detail on that later time, on how we've integrated a steel roll cage into an aluminum chassis. Others who have that same problem, whether it be Aston or Ferrari, merely put some saddle clamps, steel saddle clamps, fold them on, build the roll cage off of that, which functionally works. It's not really up to the safety standards that we like to employ at GM and GM Racing. So the system we've developed is fairly technical, fairly unique, and has had a lot of testing on it from the standpoint of strength and driver protection. So we're pretty proud of that. We're pretty excited about it. In the end, it helps make a much better race car as well. In addition, we're not going to be running carbon brakes. The GT2 rules for cost consideration. We'll be back to steel brakes, which, by the way, we ran back in 1999 when we gave you the So we're back to steel brakes on the car. The other significant change is that race engines are now going to be built in-house at the Empower Train Performance Center, which is literally across the street from the race shop. It's where all the production ZR1 engines are built, and before they're pushed into the production cars, and the same folks are going to be building our race engines. We're going to start this year with a 6-liter version of our 7-liter motor. Essentially the same engine, but just with a little different crankshaft in it. It'll be same bore center, same bore, just different strokes to get it to the 6-liter limit required by the rules. Next year, the rules change to 5.5 which will be based on a new generation family of data throughout that are utilized throughout this line of production park. So that's going to be an exciting time for us too when we bring that out. You know, I think that we've had some great racing in GT1. I think it's been a terrific chapter in Corvette racing history. I know we've all been proud to be part of it. We've worked very hard to get Corvette to be perhaps the world's greatest sports car, be recognized as one of the world's greatest sports cars, and that it's the heritage that's been honed by the racing in Le Mans history to be achieved. I think we're going to find just some amazing competition to do. When you look at what's coming, you've got BMW there, you've got Porsche there, you've got Ferrari there, you have the Panos there, you have Aston Martin there. I didn't mention BMW, I'm saying it over again. The Jaguar coming along. I don't know if those of you who followed Spa last weekend saw that Audi snuck their GT3 car into the GT2 category. I think we might be seeing some movement on them maybe to enter this fray. You get 7 or 8 global manufacturers competing in the GT series, the quality of the American Le Mans series, and then over Le Mans. It's going to make for some exciting racing, and we're excited to be part of it. I'll close now, and with that, I'll turn it over to Tadge, and he's going to elaborate on some of the real relevance that racing has brought to the production spot. Tadge?
Thanks, Doug. Sitting in my seat on the production side, I see the move to GT2 as the extension of the trajectory we've been on. I've been on Corvette since the early 90s, and when we were doing the C5, we were doing the car, worried about getting the car on the street, eventually put the C5 on the street, then decided to go racing, so the race team kind of followed the production car. Over the last 10 years, the race team and the production cars team have gotten closer and closer together, learning to capitalize on each other's strengths, learning to leverage the synergies that can come from racing full-on on the weekends, and then not just getting the glory and spreading it to the street car, but the actual technology sharing. So, midway through that 10-year span, we brought out the C6, and at that point, we made a big deal out of doing the Z06 and the C6R really in parallel, to the point where the race car debuted at Sebring at the same time the very first production cars were running down the line in Bowling Green. So those cars were really developed in parallel and really maximized the sharing that can occur. We've talked extensively about prior development that is shared between the cars. The race car, of course, provides lots of aero capability, lots of aero understanding, and the technology behind that, the computational fluid dynamics that enables you to predict what's going to happen ahead of time without unnecessarily expensive wind tunnel time, has been a real windfall, so to speak, for the production car. In terms of horsepower, generation, delivery, engine efficiency, cylinder head design, lube system, traditionally large-scale manufacturers like General Motors have not had strengths in understanding the lube system that's required for the incredible environment that racing sees, with incredible stresses on the engine, incredible demands on the lubrication system. So we wouldn't have the dry sump system that we have today on the Z06 and ZR1 if it wasn't our partnership with the race team. And the list goes on and on, composite materials, tire technology, you name it. The streetcar is also looked at as a very important starting point for the race car. I mean, things like just the shape of our greenhouse, the windshield side glass and back window, the teardrop shape that a signature Corvette has been for about 50 years, has proven to be an extremely efficient aerodynamic shape, since you need to stay close to the streetcar. Having the streetcar have that shape is a great enabler. Little things you don't even notice, like having the cool air inlet the proper height to the ground like it was engineered on the Z06, makes for a very efficient cooling on the race car. And then the production car even when we were in GT1, was a source for relatively low-cost, validated components that could help keep the cost of the race program down. I dare to say that virtually none of the other GT1 competitors use any of the production parts on their race cars. That was not true of us. We had quite a number of parts that were either exactly production or lightly modified or heavily modified versions of the production parts on the car. So for me, moving to GT2 only makes us able to leverage those ties even stronger. I'm really excited to bring the race car and the street car closer together, bring the teams ever closer together, and I'm looking forward to the, you know, the endurance racing crucible that is GT2, and like Doug was saying, all the highly capable manufacturers that are going to be engaged in this series are going to drive progress extremely rapidly. And I look at racing as the most cost-effective way to improve performance on a four-wheel vehicle, and that's what Corvette is all about. So we'll probably share more about what the commonalities are, the additional commonalities between the street car and production car, but the list will be much, much longer than it was in GT2. My favorite is, maybe Johnny will talk about it next, but the steering column is carryover, which means the race drivers will be able to hop in the car, adjust the tilt wheel, and be able to adjust the power telescoping wheel to suit their particular driving position. So I think it's going to be a very comfortable, very easy car to drive, and look forward to providing as many of those production components to the race car as absolutely possible. So that's the summary from where I sit. I'd like to turn it over to Johnny for his comments.
Thanks, Dad. I tell you, after months and months and months of Doug swearing us to being completely top secret and having thousands of Corvette fans asking you about the car, it's nice to finally get in the opportunity to talk about it. You know, like everything Corvette Racing does, the new car is amazing. And, you know, Tadge talked about driver comfort, and it is so nice, you know, that, you know, I'm a little bit taller than Ian, you know, at least until he hits puberty. And, you know, being able to move the steering wheel up, down, forward, and back is a great thing that we have now. But, you know, it has retained so many of the very cool qualities of the GT1 car. You know, when we're over in Le Mans and here in the States as well, one of the things a lot of the fans are concerned with, you know, they really wanted to make sure it still sounds like a Corvette, and it very much does. And, you know, all of us that are driving the car, it's funny because some people might think that we're not excited because, you know, you think drivers want to, you know, be in the prototype category, but all of us just want to go where the competition is. You know, we had done Corvette Racing such an amazing job proving to the world how great that GT1 car was that, you know, people stopped wanting to race us because they were, for more or less, you know, going to be racing for third. And so, you know, to get in a position now where, once again, in many ways, we're the underdog. You know, we're going to have to reprove ourselves. People forget that when Corvette Racing started, you know, there were several years of being beaten and learning, and the French just telling them, just build a better car, you know, not giving any breaks. And so, you know, that is what, you know, everybody at Corvette Racing did, you know, spearheaded by Doug and pushing everybody as hard as they can and getting the best people involved. So, you know, we're very excited about entering a new chapter where, you know, all four of us as drivers are going to be tested again, and the team as well, to find out, okay, are we as good as we really think that we are? You know, the past couple of years, people don't think that we've been really pushing ourselves that hard. But you never race anyone harder, really, than your teammate, especially when they have the exact same stuff. So, you know, I think that all four of us that are driving the cars are quite confident, you know, in our abilities to get out there and learn, you know, our strengths versus the other cars. But I will just say, you know, in typical Pratt & Miller style, you know, they have designed an amazing car. It is, you know, very rarely do you debut a car in testing and not have problems. And I mean, from day one, we have been testing, when we have gone testing, and getting 8 hours of running it and data collecting it. And the biggest change really, you know, is with us having less aero now, you know, we're driving the car, you're sliding it a little bit more. But also the switch from carbon rotors to steel rotors has meant an adjustment for us. But, you know, that move in itself, you know, kind of shows the strength of, you know, Corvette engineers. And that when we first ran the car, there were some issues. And all drivers, all of us were having a difficult time with it. And but, you know, over the months that were taking place, where the engineers were going through data and looking at things and changing bits, you know, we ran the car a week ago, and I mean, every single issue that we had in regards to brake and performance has been resolved. And that really is the strength of Corvette Racing. It's the engineer's ability, Gary Pratt's ability, Doug Dan's ability, you know, to address these issues and make sure that we have the tools that we need to be competitive. You know, our expectations going into Mid-Ohio this weekend is, you know, we expect to look good. You know, we've got what we know is going to be a great race car, but what we don't know is where our strengths and weaknesses are versus the competitors. The Porsche, for example, by having its engine in the rear, you might, at least I'm expecting they might be a little bit stronger coming off of corners. You know, the physics involved in that vehicle design kind of dictate it might have that advantage. But, you know, so, you know, as we move forward, yeah, we have high expectations. It'd be very cool to get a car on the podium. Hopefully the three car. And but also, you know, we're realistic in knowing that, okay, we're, you know what, we're kind of new kids on the block with a ton of experience, but we're going to have to figure out how these guys race and you know, come away from the weekend with a lot of experience that hopefully will mean that in a couple of races, you know, we'll once again be the guys everyone's chasing. So, you know, you can probably hear it in my voice where it's been a while since we've done battle, and we are very much looking forward to it. And shoot, with that, I'll turn it back to Rick Vogelin to take control of things.
Thank you very much, Johnny. This concludes the introductory remarks. We'd now like to open this up to media Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star then one on your touchtone phone. You're going to hear a tone indicating you've been placed in the queue. Question gets answered, you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Once again, if you have a question, star one. And first in line of Jonathan Ingram with Autosport, please go ahead.
Hello, thanks very much for the invitation, and I look forward to seeing the new Corvette. My question is for Mark Kent. I presume he's still on the line. I'm curious if the budget is any less for this program than the previous GT1 program. And if so, is this sort of like a right place, right time scenario as far as what's going on macroeconomically?
Well, Jonathan, I'll tell you, as we went through the bankruptcy process here at General Motors, it forced us to make some very difficult decisions on a lot of different areas. We looked at every dollar we spend as a company, all our promotional platforms, whether it was motorsports, football, basketball, bass fishing, anywhere we spent money, we took a hard look at it. And a lot of our promotions in the past generated a positive return on investment. I mean, we invest money in these platforms to sell cars, and in the past, all of those did that. But as we went through bankruptcy, it was no longer just good enough to generate a return on investment. We needed to stick with the platforms that generated significant return on investment. So across all our portfolios, we made some significant reductions, not only in the number of portfolios that we participated in, but also the investment in each. So in the motorsports arena, we have reduced the portfolio, we have reduced support in various series, we've eliminated support in various series. But when it comes down to Corvette Racing is a motorsports platform that generates a significant return on investment for the company just in the number of vehicles we sell by participating. not even looking at some of the ancillary benefits, which should not be overlooked, as Tadge talked about, with the benefit of taking what we learn on the street to the racetrack and vice versa. So Corvette Racing is a platform we're sticking with. It's very valuable to the company, and we're looking forward to getting this new GT2 car on the track.
Is it possible to follow up?
Yeah, one follow-up question.
Okay, on the relative question of budgets, I know these are private and so forth relative to what other teams are doing and other manufacturers, but, I mean, are you able to do this more efficiently, let's say, than the GT1 program?
I'd have to say that historically everything we did within motorsports we did very effectively and very efficiently. General Motors has historically won more championships each year than any other manufacturer, and based on what we believe the industry is spending in motorsports, we believe we're doing it more efficiently than any other manufacturer. So we have some guiding principles here at General Motors, and one of them is we race to win, and if we can't win, we won't race. And we believe we have the resources in place that are sufficient for us to win on the track.
Our next question is from Steve Smith with the Orlando Sentinel. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark. Quick question. Congratulations on the new program. I'm not entirely clear, although I know you've been consistent on this, why with an opportunity to change things over in ALMS and in the Nationwide Series in NASCAR, why you're not running the Camaro at all except for Coney Challenge, with the Impala and the Corvette being pretty well established. It just seems like the marketing budget might be spent pretty well getting the Camaro off the ground, and I just wanted to speak to that.
We've looked at racing the Camaro, and one thing that we do not want to do is to force a car where it shouldn't be. So as we looked at NASCAR, for example, we took a very hard look at running the Camaro in the Nationwide Series. That was a request made of us by NASCAR, and we've had a tremendous partnership with NASCAR. So we took a very hard look at it, but at the end of the day, because of the quest for very close competition and the need to have templated bodies in that series, we just felt that by forcing the Camaro into the Nationwide templates, we were compromising the body lines of an iconic car. So at the end of the day, we just could not get the Camaro in the Nationwide Series to satisfy our requirements. We are looking at it in other series, the Coney Challenge Series, for example, where the body is production. That's a slam dunk. There are some applications for it in drag racing, stock, super stock. We're looking forward to seeing it on the NHRA circuit. But other than that, we really don't see any need to continue to push the Camaro in the motorsports arena. You know, there's other areas for us to promote the Camaro. You know, the V6 gets tremendous fuel economy. We need to find ways to take our marketing dollars around the Camaro and expand the customer base beyond the pure motorsport enthusiast.
Got it. Thank you, Mark.
And next one to Ryan Smith with the American Le Mans Series. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us, and look forward to seeing the cars finally in action. Johnny, I was wondering if you could address the competition aspect of this. So much has been made over the last couple of years about, and Doug alluded to just a few minutes ago, of the team more or less racing itself, but now that you're going into a class full of Porsches and BMWs and Ferraris, et cetera, does that put more of the focus back on the team aspect of a two-car effort?
Oh, very much so. You know, the cars, you know, might lap time be a little bit slower, but if you look at the you know, resumes of the drivers there, I mean, they're every bit as strong as those, you know, in the prototypes. You know, you have some brilliant drivers competing there and some very strong teams with a ton of experience. I can't help but, you know, when I look at our effort, really it's the personnel that make the difference. You know, everybody at Corvette Racing, and one other thing, you know, to stress, this is an American team built by American engineers and America's best. And you know, we're still going to be, I understand, running the E85. So you know, we are approaching things very, you know, intelligently, but also with concerns to everything that's going on. One of the very cool things that the American Le Mans Series, you know, doing is the Green Challenge, and I think it's one of the things that does attract manufacturers to the series, is, you know, forcing that technology forward to benefit production cars. But you know, getting back to your question, we're totally excited about it. I mean, I challenge anybody to beat us in a pit stop competition. You know, when we were doing the Klein Tools Challenge, you know, every year it was Corvette Racing, either the 3-car or the 4-car. And so, you know, again, our team is so prepared in all aspects. And then strategy-wise, you know, again, we now find ourselves in a situation where we might not have in the past, you know, changed strategies, one car versus another. Now we can do that type of thing in this category to try to jump ahead and, you know, pull a Penske-type win, you know, that he was always so brilliant at doing. So, you know, I think we're pretty comfortable with our driver lineups and where we all stand relative to the other competitors. But, you know, again, you look at GT2 and how close everybody runs. And I know that, you know, all the four of us regular guys are very excited about it. And you know, the crew guys are totally excited about it. And that, you know, I don't think they're going to mind, you know, if a car comes back with a... I think they're probably expecting a car to come back every now and then with a tire mark on it. But because, I mean, we're going to have to really, you know, push hard and drive aggressively in order to be successful. But all of us are very excited about doing that.
Thanks, Johnny.
Our next question is from Peter Brock with Roth Publications. Please go ahead.
Hey, Johnny. Glad to hear you out there. Interesting that your comments are that the car has a little bit less aero, and of course that you said the carbon and steel rotors are different. But what do you feel is the main difference between the GT1 and the GT2? You've been racing against these guys now for several years, so you actually know who's in each car pretty well. But how do you feel with the, I mean, you've been eating the guys alive with the GT1 car, but now you're getting in the GT2 car, and you'll be pretty much the same speed. Where do you feel the advantage of the Corvette will be compared to the other cars?
You know, based on what we've seen GT1 versus GT2 so far, I got to tell you, you know, top end is not a whole lot different. You know, and some of that has to do with the fact that we're going to be running, you know, less aero. So, but I think the strength of the Corvette is its mid-corner speed, our ability to carry, you know, speed into the corners. You know, I think that will you know, show well for us. You know, again, it's real hard until we get out there. You know, I mean, even with the GT1 car, you know, there are times on street circuits where it's point and squirt, and the Porsche having that engine back there really allows it to get out of a corner, you know, well. And even with the GT1 car, there were times where getting by a GT2 car, bloody difficult. And so I think that we're all going to be, you know, learning a little bit about that. As far as braking points and stuff go, you know, the GT2 cars had gotten so strong and so developed, whether it be the Porsche or the Ferrari. I'm guessing BMW is, they've been racing all year, that they probably learned some things. But the braking points, you know, got to the point where they were not a whole lot, you know, we weren't a whole lot deeper in the GT1 car than the GT2 cars were. So we kind of know where braking points should be. And I just think, you know, there's going to be learning for all of us. One of the neat things that we're hoping is going to happen, you know, with the GT1 car and the amount of aero it had working for it, if you got close, say, in turn 12 at Road Atlanta to a GT2 car, you'd lose your front end. You'd lose all your aero. It was relying so much, you know, on those front louvers, the front splitter, all that kind of stuff. At the same time, if you're going through turn 12 and a prototype came up and really tucked himself underneath you, you'd lose the back end of the car. And so with us being less reliant now on aero, I don't think we're going to be, you know, noticing that as much. But, you know, again, we're going to find out in a couple days.
How about rim width and tires? Have you been reduced considerably in that area?
That would be more of a Doug Feehan question. I just drive them.
Okay, Doug, that's a good question, Peter. And we'll be running the same size wheels and tires.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. There's a little weight differential in the rules that allows you to go that way.
Yeah.
And as in most aspects of life, bigger is better.
Yeah.
Has Michelin come up with a tire for you for this season?
Actually, they've done obviously some extensive GP2 stuff, and the tires that they have provided for us thus far in testing have been really, really good, which provides a lot of the same characteristics as in GP1. So that's been pretty seamless. Hasn't really been an issue.
Great, great to hear. Well, we're sure looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're excited ourselves.
My next question is from Rob McCurdy with Mansfield News Journal. Please go ahead.
Johnny, with more competition and just varied competition, how is your race weekend going to change, and how you get yourself ready and psyched up? And obviously it's got to be quite a bit more exciting than kind of the intramurals that you've been forced to endure the last several years in racing.
You know, I don't know how much different, to be honest with you, it's going to be. I'll tell you this. You know, if my email and stuff is any indication, it's going to be a crazy weekend, because Corvette owners, I mean, across the country and Europe, all over the place, they're gaga for this car. They're waiting for the story. They're, you know, I mean, you know, we take a picture when we tested of, you know, of the car with our cell phone, and Deanna would be like, you're not sending that to anybody. And so, I mean, we are so excited, but the interest in this car has been amazing. But as far as, you know, how the team meetings go, I'm sure it's going to be like it always is, you know, and that, you know, we, before the race, you know, Doug and Gary and the engineers will get us drivers together and tell us what to expect, what to do. Doug really took the reins off us this year and was like, hey, race each other hard as you can, just don't hit each other. And so, you know, I think there's going to be, very hard competition, you know, and it's going to be neat, you know, to get out there against those guys in the Flying Lizard cars. Okay, those guys are awesome, very strong factory drivers. I think in our mind there's going to be a sense of being patient, you know, wanting to learn, figure things out. But you know, again, you need to remember, we might not have been racing Aston Martins or Ferraris or Pro Drive guys or, you know, guys from Europe, but we've been racing each other bloody, bloody hard. I mean, each lap, whether it was, you know, Long Beach or Sebring or Le Mans, each lap is qualifying. That is really the state that that racing has come to. And so, you know, we're going to be pushing as hard as we can, but also listening to the advice that we get from Doug and Gary and following their directions. You know, Doug is he's been running this the program manager as long as I've been doing this. And, you know, the very first race that I did for him was the 20, you know, 4 hours of Daytona in 2001. He gave me three simple rules. And he's like, man, you follow these rules, okay, good things are going to happen. And so I'm pretty confident that, you know, we'll get another, you know, talking to from him, reminding us of what is important. Then it's our job just to execute.
All right. Thank you, Johnny.
Yep.
And we'll go to Lane Perry with racesforums.com. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I guess this is a carry-on from John somewhat. You mentioned that they're running the E85 carryover. And, is there a allowance for fuel capacity differentiation to sell? Will you guys be able to run the E85 at the long?
I will start that answer, but I think really Doug is the best one. You know, with us going to E85, again, that was very much, you know, in line, I think, with General Motors policy of really trying to be green. You know, it's a funny thing. Most people don't realize, you know, I've got a 2002 convertible Corvette, and doing 80 miles an hour, I get over 29 miles to a gallon. I mean, they're sweet cars as far as mileage goes. But you know, carrying that over into racing and learning and promoting that as much as we can, I think is a good thing. And I think it's appropriate that in the world of racing, General Motors and the Chevrolet Corvette leads the way. But as far as the other stuff, I think maybe Doug is better to handle that.
Yeah, I think it's the performance level, obviously, of E85 compared to gasoline, when we look at a gallon-to-gallon comparison, in just broad brush numbers, is about 20%. Like about 20% less energy in a gallon of ethanol than a gallon of gasoline. So consequently, to answer your question, it becomes merely a simple math equation. The sanctioning body has different fuel capacities for cars depending on which fuel they're running, whether they're running the race gas or the ethanol. We'll be carrying 110 liters of ethanol, and I think that gas cars carry about 90 gallons of gasoline. The other thing that would be then the next logical extension of that question would be in fueling times, because obviously if both cars run to empty, you know, it's going to be a lot faster to put in 90 liters than 110. So restrictor sizes on the fuel rigs have been modified to allow for that accommodation, so that everything across the board pretty much runs even. So I think that pretty much covers where you were going.
Plan on running the fuel at?
Oh, at Le Mans. At this point in time, no. Although Le Mans is taking a serious look at a bunch of different stuff. You know, they had their hands pretty much full with the diesel deal, with Audi first, and of course Peugeot coming along, and looking at the various energy levels and characteristics of the engines that employ those different fuels. So they were focusing on that. They recognize that E85 is important, and obviously it's used extensively throughout the European continent and up in the Scandinavian countries as well. So I don't have a prediction for you. They haven't answered the question whether or not it will be. I highly doubt it will be this year, but in the future I think it may be. But we haven't been able to run it thus far, and I don't think it will be different.
Mike, carry on. The new
It will be brand new architecture. It will be a brand new engine, and yes, it will be running on E85 as well. We're in a great partnership with the series. You know, it was a confluence of concepts. We had already looked at E85 when the series decided they wanted to go to it, and just a kind of an odd set of circumstances. Doug Robinson called me. Said, would you guys ever have any interest in running the 85? And we had just finished running some testing with the 85, and then we got involved with the Department of Energy and the Department of Transportation and the Society of Automotive Engineers and Michelin, and this whole green challenge thing kind of birthed itself in a very compressed time frame, because all the parties had been doing work on it anyway. So yes, the new engine will be running on the 85.
And Doug, I think I remember, to correct me if I'm wrong, that next year's engine, the 5.5 liter, will be back to being based on the production LS3 block as opposed to racing block. So another example of bringing the cars closer together.
Yes, that is correct. To clarify what Chad has indicated, the block we use now is a production-based block, but it doesn't come off the assembly line. There's some, without getting into the minutia of it, there's some casting issues that caused us to have a huge amount of waste when we built the race engine. We were getting about one block out of 25 would make it through the process that we had to have to ensure the quality we had. So we used the same tools, same dies, same materials, but those all had to be hand cast because the tolerances had to be so much closer up. And that was you know, an expensive way to do business. The 5.5 liter, by virtue of the brand new architecture that GM has developed, not the least of which a lot of it has come from what they've learned in racing, we'll be able to pull blocks right off the assembly line. That becomes a great cost saver.
Our next question is from line of Sam Abdulhamid with Greenfield Forecast. Please go ahead.
You're going to be continuing with Cellulosic 85 for this year and next year. With the Green Challenge really starting to come on this year, has there been any thought to maybe pursuing some sort of hybrid type drivetrain like a KERS type system? Some Motorsports is now running one on their LMP1 car. Any thought to doing something like that in the Corvette?
You know, from a production standpoint in powertrain, I don't think any manufacturer in the world can come close to having the library and extensive knowledge that GM has from hydrogen power to E85 to KERS to everything. All that exists in-house. You never see it. You don't hear a lot about it. They're very secretive about it. But it's there. There's some of the most, there's some wild things that GM has already completed. From a racing perspective, I'll tell you this. We've looked at it. We've done research on it. We've investigated it, and we continue to look at it. So if the dynamics of the sport move in that direction, we'll be prepared.
All right, thank you.
And we have a question from Nate Ryan with USA Today. Please go ahead.
Yeah, a follow-up on that for Doug. How do you think other series are watching what's going on? They all have the E85 and how it works for you guys. Do you think other series might consider switching to it based on the success you've
had? Well, being as NASCAR just moved to unleaded, I'm sure they're probably watching. It's amazing to me that others haven't gone there just for the sake of going there because they know it's the right thing to do. It sends a great message. I mean, it's, you know, ethanol is not the answer, but it's part of a solution. It's part of a solution in so many different ways. It certainly is part of a solution which spews out the exhaust pipe. That's pretty clear. But the larger thing is, and sometimes people don't see this, but it's been first and foremost in any of the talks that I've given, is that the American public needs to begin to be tutored on the fact that cars will not always be driven by gasoline. It's what we've become accustomed to. It's the only thing we've ever known in this country for the most part. And now when you see the advent of whether it's biodiesel or you see the advent of electric, you see the advent of the Bolt, you see the advent of the Prius, there's new things coming. There's no better way to demonstrate that new things need not be feared as to use something as high performance as a Corvette race car and introduce cellulosic E85 to it. And look at the performance and reliability you can get from it. I mean, if it's good enough to go ahead and win races in a Corvette, mom can put it in the SUV to take kids to school, dad can put it to pick up and go to work. It's an educational process as much as it is a scientific endeavor. On those two fronts, that's why the Green Challenge makes so much sense. It's an educational thing for the consumer to be prepared for new things. New horizons are going to be occurring in the way automobiles are developed. So we wanted to be a leader in that. That's why we were first.
Also gives us a platform to talk that E85 doesn't have to be a food versus fuel issue.
Oh, no question, and very strong point. Absolutely. That's absolutely the case. You know, the cellulosic plants that are being built today are portable. I don't know if you guys know that, but they're built to be taken apart and reassembled. And the reason for that is they can take these plants to where the material is. You know, our first cellulosic E85 plant was someplace in Montana, I think, or Wyoming, and it was a DNR project out there where they were removing the stuff from the forest floor that when a forest fire starts, the stuff like dynamite, I mean, it just almost explodes when the heat hits it. So they clean off that forest floor to keep that clean. Well, ordinarily, they would take that out and burn it, oddly enough. So what they do now is they ship it to, you know, they build this plant in a geographic region that's accessible. They take that stuff, they ship it to the plant, and they build the cellulosic E85 out. I mean, it's a very unique process and does not affect the food chain. And by the way, for clarification, the corn that's grown for E85 in this country
it has been bred specifically for building E85. So it's not like we're, you know, going down and taking your kids' bird's eye frozen corn and making fuel out of it. I mean, the corn that's grown for E85 is grown specifically for that.
Doug, how much time did you guys spend testing E85 for race conditions? And did the transition go easier than you expected?
And I would let in with that, and I get myself off track sometimes, because that was going to be the whole point of this, and others moving forward with it. The transition is not difficult. I talked to the guys on the engine side of it, and I did this, oddly enough, as a program preservation move. I knew where we were going, and any time I can try and make our program be more relevant to production. You know, I knew we were a leader in flex fuel vehicles. I think we got over 3.5 million of them out there right now. If that's the direction the company was going to go in, which was the right direction, why couldn't we follow it in racing? So on the side, I mean, it was not a formally introduced program. I got together with the engine guys and said, what do you think would happen running the 85? Well, oddly enough, the engine guys were the same guys that did all the Indy motors, you know, back when the Oldsmobile was doing Indy. And they said, well, we think we can do that. I mean, it was a couple months, and they had an engine up and running, and you know, we were doing power runs on it. We were doing durability and reliability. We were looking at lubrication. We were looking at assembly and disassembly, which is a huge issue with that stuff, because there's no lubrication quality to it. In the course of probably 6 months of just casual running, I mean, we had something working. The biggest challenge we had was with the fuel cell manufacturers trying to find something that would hold the fuel. That was really the most difficult part. It's not hard.
Thanks.
And we do have a question from Jonathan Ingram with Autosport. Please go ahead.
Doug, just to follow up briefly, it looks like it's not official yet, but it looks like there's going to be just one GT1 class next year. You're a veteran of this of the GT classes. What do you think about just one class in the LMS?
Well, I think, and this is just my personal perspective now, so I'm going to make sure we couch that properly. I think it makes all the sense in the world. It's what we need to have. When we're talking about relevance, at the end of the day, we've got a manufacturer series there, when you look at how we're positioned. And at the end of the day, as Mark has made perfectly clear, the object for us and for all of them is to sell cars. Well, if you can create proper relevance, you can enthuse people to spend money. GT racing needs to have a single GT class in the American market, and I think that's pretty much probably where we're headed. I'm all for it. I think it makes a huge amount of sense. It makes it a lot more fun for the spectator, a lot easier to watch the races. It makes for a much better television broadcast. We can go on and on and on and on and on. It's where we need to be. And I've pushed for it. I'll be honest with you up front. I've spent the last 2 years pushing for it.
Okay, thanks very much.
And Mr. Rogelin, no further questions in queue.
With that, we'll conclude our media teleconference. For those of you online, we certainly value and appreciate coverage of Corvette Racing. Please don't hesitate to contact me for additional information and interview requests. Thank you, and we'll see you at the races.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude your conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.